children.
It's all for you!
We have such sights to show you.
Started?
Yeah, sure. Let's fucking do it. Damn, we were no good transition this
no
time.
No good transition.
No, I got nothing. I got shit.
Thankfully, I've been recording, so I'm sure there's something to just bring us in, but...
Just do the sax man. Do it.
I'm not doing it.
Yeah, I'm not doing it either.
It's just too good.
Leave now.
All right, I know. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Nobody wanted to do the sax man. That's it. We're just podcast done.
Anyway, if you couldn't tell already, first off, welcome everyone to another episode of the Horrible People's Podcast. I am your host, Alex Webster. With me, as always, is my wonderful co-host, Anthony Fuentes.
Yo.
And joining us today, bum bum bum.
To top off the birth month.
To top off my birthday month. Hi, James.
Hey, everybody.
Okay, nobody can see you moving your arms.
I'm moving my arms. It's for my own...
He's excited to be here.
It's for my own posterity, all right? I'm just getting excited.
He's
glad
excited.
To be back.
Yes. Welcome back. We're so excited to have you. I'm very excited. I specifically chose this movie because I knew you would want to return for this movie in particular.
Absolutely.
And the movie is The Lost Boys.
Yep, yeah. From good old, that wonderful, wonderful year of
1987.
Yeah.
The wonderful year of 1987.
Where two glorious people here were born.
All right.
I mean, it was in the 80s. 80s was a great decade anyway.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Relax.
It's like back in the right now.
Yeah. But this is our final pick for my birth month, mm-hmm. and I'm very excited to talk about it because this movie is fucking awesome.
Right?
It's absolute cheese, but like in the best way possible.
Is it really cheese, though? Is it?
Watching it with my mom, who was, like, a teenager, like, a straight-up, like, in high school teenager when this movie came out, she was just like, this movie is very cheesy, but in a good way.
It's like that default.
I don't think it's as cheesy as, like, a lot of the other older films
are. Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But it is pretty cheesy. I'll give it some cheese, not a lot of cheese.
I think for 80s movies, there's a default level of cheese you have to have. And it depends on if you go above or below that. And Lost Boys is like right down the middle of like what they need to be an 80s movie.
And you know what? It's not even like a bad kind of cheesy.
No,
it is comforting.
Yeah.
It's like mm-hmm. a hug. Like
it's like every line of dialogue, you're like, yep, that's a good line. They did it. They did exactly right.
It's true. Like there are some lines where I'm just like, this is predictable but funny. But it's predictable because I'm in 2020, not in 1987.
Oh my gosh. Well, James, now that you're the guest here, you get to introduce the good old facts we got going on. So
the introduction.
The introduction, the synopsis, if you will.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
The Lost Boys. After moving to a new town, two brothers discover that the area is a haven for vampires, which I think is a really...
Sure.
Lacking
simple.
Synopsis.
I was thinking simple. It's like too simple.
It is very, very simple. There's a lot more going on, people.
There's a lot going on.
It's IMDb. They don't care.
It is directed by Mr. Joel Schumacher. Shout out to that guy and his craziness.
He's fucking mad. He's a mad lad, dude.
Screenplay by Janice Fisher, Jeffrey Boehm, and James Jeremias.
A lot of J's, dude. There are four J's involved in the production of this film.
Hey.
J's.
And we have James here as a guest.
Wow.
J is a great letter, I'm just saying. So let's see, it's starring Jason Patrick.
Okay.
Corey Haim. Diane Wiest. Barnard?
I guess.
Barnard Hughes?
Said, yeah.
Barnard, that's an interesting name. Edward Herman. Kiefer Sutherland, shout out. Jamie Gertz.
Shout out.
Corey Feldman, yep. Mm-hmm. And Alex Winter.
Damn.
The budget for this film was $8.5 million, which is kind of a crap load for 1987.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It was released July 31st, 1987, and it grossed $32.2 million in the box office.
Woo.
That's right.
God, what a summer movie.
This soul is such a summer movie.
It is.
This is like, yeah. Like, if they released a Lost Boys-esque film, like, that had the same status as this, yes, we'd be in the theaters like, oh, yeah.
If they released any kind of vampire movie that's even, like, remotely like the Lost Boys, I'd go watch it.
Yeah.
Vampire movies suck ass now. I'm just saying.
Oh, we're going to get into that. We are going to totally
Oh,
get,
is that
yeah.
going to be a point of discussion?
Some of the discussion questions are very... Because this is a pretty fundamental film in terms of, like, vampire lore.
Yeah.
Like, it really changed the game. But, of course, we're going to have to learn all about that shit.
Yeah.
So, let's get into it right now. All right. So, when asked what The Lost Boys was about, director Joel Schumacher, who was second choice in direct, by the way, actually third choice, I kind of fucked that up, was very clear that his film is, quote, in a way about the fear we have of the other, those who live outside of the mainstream, end quote. And mainstream is actually a very big point of contention here, because what was mainstream? During the time of this film's development, which spanned, of course, the mid to late 80s. And let's just say things were very contentious back then. Yeah. So
they were.
What?
We were born in turmoil, goddammit.
We're still in turmoil. It's just turmoil.
Oh,
anymore.
My God. No, there's going to be a second baby boom, too, because people are staying home and just boning.
Yeah.
Yeah. So those kids, the COVID kids, Jesus.
Ew.
History's weird. Speaking of shitty history, evangelical preacher Jerry Falwell, which we covered.
Oh, we talked about him
yeah,
earlier.
He came up in my research also, so I'm like, I have to bring him up now.
Great.
And the quote-unquote moral majority, fucking hate these people, became a force in the American political landscape, promoting values like the traditional nuclear family and the morals that came with it, while, of course, condemning anything that went against that norm, such as the gay community and single-parent households. Or in their words, quote-unquote, destructive social liberalism.
Woo!
Yeah, we are destructive social liberals, guys.
I know. Run for the hills.
Watch out. James has a shirt with graphics on it. but having taken hold of the mainstream, the level of homophobia got so bad that Ronald Reagan would drag his feet for years when confronted with the AIDS crisis, resulting in a huge number of deaths and wide-sweeping discrimination leading up to it. Alex, I'm sure you've studied a lot of that.
Yeah, extensively.
Pretty bad.
I could go into depth.
You might have to in discussion question. But while the traditional family values enraptured, of course, the mainstream, and look at any sitcom from around this time.
Yeah.
It's a fucking, like, yeah, we're all a regular family. But, of course, openly gay director Joel Schumacher had managed to break through by means of sheer creative output. The moral majority was not about to keep this fucker down. No, definitely not.
I did not know he was gay.
Yeah, no, he's like a pretty prolific...
Openly gay.
Yeah, definitely.
That makes Batman and Robin
that
so much more sense,
yeah.
Though. I literally did not know that, and now I'm like, oh...
Oh, you're just, like, connecting to
the
yeah,
dots. I'm like, no wonder
like,
why it was so out there. The nipples on the suit, I get it.
The gay lens is prominent.
the multicolored shots everywhere. I get it.
We'll bring that up later on, Daniel, don't worry. But when he first broke into the industry, he wrote films like Car Wash and The Wiz, both of which were successful and developed huge cult followings. And I watched those when I was a kid. The Wiz in particular.
Car Wash.
Yeah, dude, he did Car Wash. He wrote Car Wash.
I had no idea.
Yeah, Joel Schumacher's a motherfucker, man. This guy's great.
Yeah, yeah.
But from here, he moved on to the direct... Oh, he actually wrote those movies, but he directed... some other huge hits coming on. So he got a piece of the mainstream pie by writing and directing the 80s Brat Pack film, St. Elmo's Fire,
ooh,
starring, of course, Emilio Estevez, Rob Lowe, Andrew McCarthy, Demi Moore, Judd Nelson, Ali Sheedy, and, of course, is it Mar Whittingham?
Sure.
Mayor.
Barnard. Who knows?
What am I gonna name my daughter? Looking at a horse up. Mayor.
Mayor.
This is my daughter Clydesdale.
Yeah. Oh god.
This is my daughter Clydesdale.
but seeing significant talent in Joel Schumacher, producer Lauren Schuller Donner knew he'd be perfect to take over a project her husband, the legendary Richard Donner, who did The Omen and Superman.
Yeah.
Yeah, big fucking guy. Was working on it. It was a take on Peter Pan that imagines the title character as the Lost Boys as vampires. Yeah, sorry. Being next as vampires.
As vampires? With a V?
Yeah. It was very much a G-rated film and modeled after the Goonies.
Yeah, I got some Goonies vibes.
It's very Goonies-ish.
In some parts,
in some parts.
It was, like, way Goonies.
Mostly with...
I don't know if it was because Corey Feldman was just seeing him in it, but...
I think just the way the characters talked
to each other. Like, the Frog Brothers and then the youngest brother...
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're very Goonies-ish.
It's like half Goonies, half, like, teen angst, 80s shit.
Yeah, I would say it's, like, an older Goonies. Yeah, for sure.
It's basically, like, Goonies, if Goonies was straight about, like, rock and roll.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, yeah. But again, Joel Schumacher happily came on board, but he wasn't about to have some, what he calls, cutesy G-rated movie aimed at young kids bullshit.
Wow.
He was going to take on the establishment with his version of The Lost Boys and revamp what people thought a vampire movie should be. But what did the original script actually look like? It was pretty different. So, Mr. Brizuela, can you please tell us about this original version of The Lost Boys?
I surely will.
Yes, lad.
Good lord.
You got me like G-rated thinking. G Wilkers.
It's pretty G whiz.
The original script for The Lost Boys was purchased for $400,000, holy crap, from first-time screenwriters Janice Fisher and James Jeremias. Unfortunately, this would turn out to be their only major credit, but that might be due to the sheer difference from the final version.
Poor guy. Well, I mean, they got $400,000.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah, in 1980.
That's money, like, dude. I don't even know.
And that's yuppie culture. If they knew one Wall Street guy, they can turn that around.
Very true. The original version is often described as a family adventure movie, and that's pretty hilarious. It had characters named directly after their Peter Pan counterparts. The Frog Brothers, played by Corey Feldman and Jameson Newlander, in the final film were actually vampires in the original draft. That would have been cool.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. The protagonists were all in either 5th or 6th grade and were Boy Scouts on top of that. This includes Star, played by Jamie Gertz, woo, in the final film, which was actually just another one of the bulls. This version ended up being too kiddie for director Richard Donner, who dropped out in order to make something more adult with Lethal Weapon.
Yeah, good movie. Yeah.
Good choice.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know Richard Donner did Lethal Weapon.
He did all 4 of them.
Wow.
Wow, yeah, really?
He did all 4 of them. He wanted to do a 5th one, too, but I think he just...
It's too old. Can't take her house. She's too old.
Start interacting. Happy Gilmore. She's not a Sandler watcher.
Oh.
Wow. My mom is very staunchly anti Adam Sandler, so I didn't start watching anything with him in it until I was a little bit older.
Meanwhile, well, you just saw Uncut Gems, right?
I did. Yeah,
okay.
Meanwhile, we were born with Stanley.
Yeah, we were.
For some reason, she was totally fine with me watching The Waterboy.
That's a great Sandler film.
If there's one to watch, it's probably a pretty good one.
Yeah.
So that's like the only one I like can ever understand references.
Oh my God. We'll bring them.
Right. So Donner would actually still help produce the film. He just needed someone to take it in a different direction. Then they found their director. Their director, Mary Herron. Herron. Okay. However, talks broke down with the future American Psycho director, and Joel Schumacher was brought on board instead.
Dude, she's pretty punk rock, though. Like, Mary Herron? So she would have been an interesting take on the story also. Because, she's an American Psycho. She did a bunch of punk documentaries in the 80s. She was a journalist.
That would have been cool.
She would have been interesting.
That would have been cool.
Apparently, there was creative differences, but that's all they would say. So
she probably was leaning into the counterculture of it all.
And that's kind
of
funny too, because this film is super punk rock, dress, and like it's going against like the norms of society totally. So I don't know, that would have made sense for me.
Yeah, I think she probably was leaning like way too much into
it. Too dark.
Yeah,
I would imagine a little too dark.
Or maybe too radical. Like they had to like build the vampires around some sort of like anti-establishment type thing.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. Like the anarchist vampires and shit.
Right.
it made too much sense.
That too. Like, all right, calm down. This is too political, and it's not about just, like, sucking blood.
We need some G-Wiz in here.
No, we need a man dipped in baby oil playing the saxophone. Yeah.
Don't we, though? Don't we?
She did American Psycho. She probably would have kept that scene in.
Right?
Point taken.
So, the director brought on writer Jeffrey Boehm, who had worked on Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. Yeah. And together they revamped this G-rated family affair into an R-rated teen-focused genre film.
Yay.
Yeah. The film was to be about a recently divorced former hippie who, oddly enough, had the respect of her two children.
Yeah, that was a controversial story point for hippies back in the day.
Yeah. A far cry from the traditional nuclear family common in genre films of the time.
I did like that. Like, the kids just didn't openly disdain their mother.
Yeah, definitely not.
Yeah, like, the only part was when Michael is discussing how he was named when he's talking to Star. But it wasn't like he was angry at his mom for doing that.
Yeah.
Whatsoever.
Or even when, like, he's, like, turning into a vampire and, like, she's just like, I'm trying to go on a date. Can you, like, be a fucking human being? And he's like, no! I can't!
This is such a good movie.
It is.
Like, seriously. That kind of scene. Come on.
Yeah.
So, the vampires themselves were to become significantly darker and much more stylized, which they are.
Yeah, definitely.
Star was going to change into a love interest for the lead Michael, and any sense of whimsy was to be removed and replaced with a banging 80s soundtrack that Schumacher paid for by promising to direct music videos for some of the bands. He only directed one, which was Devil Inside by NXS, which is a great song.
It's a good song, yeah.
And I'm a little upset that he didn't direct if there is a music video for Mr. Saxman. That's Tim Capello, by the way. And if you don't know that song, you should look it up because it's great.
I left that detail out, but that was in the... Yeah, okay.
You should have never left that out.
Sorry.
I Still Believe by Tim Capello, people. And you can find the YouTube video of him all greased up in the film. It's great.
Wow. He also frequents the horror convention circuit. Yeah.
And he still tries to dress like he was back in the 80s. And it's really funny because he's old.
Yeah,
and we'll post it on the Instagram afterwards.
Oh, God.
So anyway, this film was turning into something far bigger than a Goonies knockoff, which it kind of wasn't, but it was.
Mm-hmm.
Now they had to get it made.
Yeah. So let's talk about it.
Yeah.
So right away, Joel Schumacher knew he wanted Jason Patrick to play the title role of Michael. And Patrick followed this up by turning Schumacher's ass down a lot.
Like a lot.
Wow. Like,
yeah.
Rejection after rejection.
Mm-hmm.
However, the director was persistent and promised Patrick he would have creative input on his character.
Holy crap.
Even going so far as to help with the script. This was enough to get the young actor on board, and he legitimately was able to help craft the script throughout the production.
Yeah. So almost as if he was like, look, I could really turn you into a vampire. If you want that, just be in the movie.
It's true.
You have to say my name a lot of times.
Patrick also managed to get Schumacher to hire Jamie Gertz as Star, despite the director looking for more of a Meg Ryan type.
Jamie
Gertz is absolutely perfect. But, also, anytime she showed up on screen, I was just like, wow.
Like 80s hair.
Yeah. Also, quick aside, my mom was just like, oh yeah, Jamie Gertz, she was in Twister. And I was just like, what?
She was?
Yeah, she was in Twister. And me and my mom's fiance were both just like, are you talking about Helen Hunt? And she's just like, no. And then I had to Google it, and I bet my mom $5. Because I was like, there's no way Jamie Gertz was in Twister. I would have remembered it. And she totally was in Twister. Oh, she was Bill Paxton's first wife. Or, new wife.
Right. Huh. It's because she has limited screen time.
Yeah, she's the psychiatrist. She's the one who says, cows.
Really?
Yeah. It's Jamie Gertz.
Dude, okay.
And I was just like...
Well, you lost $5.
I know, I did. I had to buy her coffee.
But you did get us new information.
Yeah, so there you go. Jamie Gertz from Twister.
She's also in Crossroads, which is another great older film with Ralph Macchio.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
you
if you've never seen it. Not Crossroads, a Britney Spears film.
You said Crossroads, and I was like, with Britney Spears.
It's about this old blues musician who sells his soul to the devil at the crossroads in Mississippi. And Ralph Macchio is a classical guitar player who befriends this old man because he's trying to find this lost song that he recorded, and they travel back to the crossroads to basically battle the devil. And
that's actually such a cool concept.
It's a really good film.
It's a much better concept than Crossroads with Britney Spears.
Yes, and Jamie Gertz is in it, and she's hot in that too. Jeez. It's a great film if you haven't seen it. Anyway.
No, good aside, I will seek that now.
It's a great film.
I always feel like Ralph Macchio needed to get his due.
Yeah, that's true. Because, everyone's just like, oh, he's a karate kid, but I'm like, he was in other stuff.
Oh, yeah.
My cousin
Vinny.
Yeah.
He's one of the Utes.
I don't know why that always comes up when we're talking.
No, yeah, always.
Oh, it has to.
It will always come up.
It comes up. I could, yeah, no, yeah.
He was one of the Utes.
I might watch that today, actually.
You should. Yeah.
I should. Anyway, so because of the Richard Donner connection, Corey Feldman was already signed on to the project and assumed the movie would be more like the first draft of the script. But Schumacher had different plans, and the director told Feldman to watch films like Rambo and Missing in Action, as his character would be exactly like the protagonist of those films.
Exactly like?
Exactly like
that's
Rambo?
That's how it was explained to him.
Well, I mean, he does show up with, like, the bandana.
I was
going to
say,
head.
Like, he has a red bandana, but I'm like, you know.
And his voice. His delivery where he's just like, there are vampires here.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
This comic book may see your life one day.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, so Feldman loved this, and he knew his character would legitimately believe he's just as badass as Sylvester Stallone or Chuck Norris, despite very obviously being kind of a nerd.
Yeah.
Which
he's like,
is
hey,
great.
You're gonna be just like Rambo. Just like Rambo? Yeah.
Just like Rambo.
Just like Rambo.
I'm gonna play it like Rambo.
Except you're gonna own a comic book shop and be a total geek.
And also, you know, be 13.
And small. And not know how to hold or use a weapon.
Total dork. So with the casting of Corey Haim, this would be the first film featuring Haim and Feldman as the two Coreys, cementing them as teen idols for the remainder of the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
After seeing At Close Range, Schumacher knew that he also had to cast Kiefer Sutherland in the role of David. The two got along very well, and Sutherland joined the crew after wrapping up filming on the adaptation of Stephen King's novel Stand By Me.
Ooh, that's such a good movie.
Yep.
I love that movie. Yep.
Yeah, my mom wouldn't let me watch it.
I mean, pretty dark.
Yeah, I know.
But very, very good movie.
This next line, we'll go.
What?
Nothing. Continue.
Schumacher also considered Jim Carrey for the role of David, but
what?
Ultimately stuck with Sutherland. Can you fucking imagine?
You know why, though? Because Jim Carrey was already, he already did Once Bitten.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
He was like, let's not have him for two vampire movies. That was the only reason.
He's all, hey, Michael.
How do you like those maggots, Michael?
Join us, Michael.
Fuck, I would, no.
This would have been a completely different film.
Imagine if you had Jim Carrey on your shirt right now instead.
Oh my God.
Yeah, yeah.
It's all hanging from the thing, he's just swinging. He's just like, alrighty then. He drops down.
No!
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Also, as a complete, like, out of left field, Ben Stiller was legitimately almost cast in some unknown role for the film, but he would instead making his debut film in the 1987 flop Hot Pursuit, which also starred his father, Jerry Stiller.
Yeah, Ben Stiller suddenly walked into the casting room. It was like a bunch of talented people, and he's just like, I'm not getting this role. He knew, he's like, I'm not getting
Thank
it.
Thank Christ he didn't.
Can you imagine if Ben Stiller and Jim Carrey would have been in this film?
No!
As vampires.
Yeah.
This would have been a comedy.
Oh my, with Alex Winter also.
Alex Winter.
Exactly.
Alex Winter, like, fresh off of the high of Bill and Ted.
Oh my God, this would have been a movie.
Wow. It would have been a movie.
Oh, wow.
It would have been a movie.
For sure.
Or Ben Stiller as Michael. With Jim Carrey as David.
I think I just threw up a little.
Oh, that's hilarious. All
right, Anthony.
But, of course, again, now that production was here, The Lost Boys, unlike a lot of films we cover on this podcast, would actually have a really smooth production overall. It wrapped up in, like, 3 weeks. Corey Haim would later call
this
shoot.
3 weeks?
Yeah, 3 weeks. And Corey Haim called this, quote-unquote, one of the greatest personal times in my life.
Oh, it's only 3 weeks?
3 weeks, and he loved this shit.
I mean,
Corey Haim had a really hard life,
he
though.
Did. Yeah.
Had?
Yeah.
Still has?
No, that's
Corey Haim
used to.
Yeah, no, Corey Haim's dead.
Corey Haim is the one that died. Mm-hmm. I always
Corey Feldman is still alive.
That's what I meant, had, because I was like, he's still kind of going through a lot of crap.
Corey
Haim passed away a few years ago, that's right.
Yeah, Corey Haim died in 2010.
Mm-hmm. Not a few years ago, 10 years ago.
Time is weird.
I don't even know what day it is.
We'll always remember 2020, because this is a piece of shit casualty here right here.
It's true.
But not for Corey. 1987, though, was pretty good for Feldman, or for Haim.
Probably Feldman, too.
Yeah, I think he enjoyed it. But the film was shot in Santa Cruz, California, and heavily based around the famous Santa Cruz Boardwalk. City officials were fine with the production taking place there, but asked that they change the name of the town in the script. This is because the town in the script is referred to as the murder capital of the world, which is an actual moniker for the city, mostly because of Edmund Kemper and a number of other serial killers that made their way through the city over the decades, significantly hurting, of course, Santa Cruz's reputation.
Okay, that's because Santa Cruz is a hippie town.
Yeah.
And it's very easy for people to go missing.
And yeah, and the law was not about to, like, you know, find killers of hippies.
Well, or, I mean, also, just Santa Cruz, yeah. I mean, a lot of, like, social outcasts, like, mm-hmm. found a community in Santa Cruz. So that would make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Also, it was very obvious that it was Santa Cruz. I don't know.
No, yeah. It was pretty obvious.
It was also renamed to, like, Santa Clara or something. Yes. I'm like, it's Santa Cruz, guys. Like, mm-hmm. come on.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
As I was watching it, I was like, this is definitely Santa Cruz, right? And my mom was like, I don't think so. And I'm like, I'm going to Google it. Like, and it was definitely Santa Cruz.
Murder capital of the world. Okay. All right.
Yeah. But the boardwalk was a dead giveaway.
Mm-hmm. I've always wanted to go to Santa Cruz. Never gone.
Really?
Yeah.
It's really pretty.
No. I'm going to check it out. But in total for Santa Cruz, it actually had 28 murders from 1970 and 1973. Damn. So they were pretty understandably sensitive about that label.
Hmm.
Yeah. The film ended up hiring over 2,000 locals, however, with roles ranging from punks to roller skaters and even one labeled brain dead hippie.
Yeah.
It was the biggest production the city had actually seen up until that point.
I love that. There were quite a few punks in this movie.
Yes.
Yes, there are.
But similar to the actual plot in the film, Corey Feldman and Corey Haim would sit in their hotel and watch movies or visit the local arcade while the older co-stars would party during the nights. However, in between takes, many of the cast members would make their way to the prop room and jam out as shots were being set up. So it was like a nice familial atmosphere on the set for
what,
the cast.
Yeah, I mean, that is very on par with these fucking nerds.
Yeah. but in terms of on-set injuries, Kiefer Sutherland did break his wrist while attempting to do a wheelie on his bike. But he was fixed up, and the bike was rigged so it would operate with just his left hand.
Oh, good.
Yeah. And in terms of drama, Corey Feldman was fired for less than a day due to coming to work in horrible condition after coming down from a cocaine binge.
Jesus. Mm-hmm. How old was Corey Feldman?
He was into cocaine pretty early.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, he was like, what?
14 or 15?
15, something like that?
There, yeah. Maybe 16.
Well, I mean, like Drew Barrymore got hooked on drugs. And she was like too. A yeah. man or some yeah. craziness.
Ugh.
That sucks.
I mean, think about what happened to Judy Garland. Hollywood has been Hollywood.
No, I
for,
know.
Like,
well, I mean,
ever.
Corey Feldman in particular, like,
he just looks boyish.
Yeah, well, no. I just mean, like, historically, like, he's had, like, a really, really rough go of it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So, that sucks. I didn't even realize he was, like, on cocaine this early, though.
Mm-hmm.
That sucks.
And he couldn't even go out with them. He's probably just in the hotel in the arcade coked up with Corey Haim.
With Corey Haim, yeah. Who was probably also on drugs at this point.
Oh, definitely. Yes.
That sucks.
But
wow.
The actor did apologize to the director for ruining so many takes and was immediately hired because, again, the 80s. People just did cocaine. So
doesn't matter if you were 15 years old.
They're just like, yeah, it's fine. You know, he's sorry about it. Yeah, but among the leading cast members, Kiefer Sutherland was actually had the least amount of dialogue. And a lot of it consisted with saying the word Michael, which was uttered 118 times throughout the film. Most of any film with the word Michael in it.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
But honestly, everyone just kind of got along and did the work. The bands that Schumacher lined up made everyone really enthusiastic about the vibe of the film. Even the makeup department, who made the vampire sexier at the request of Joel Schumacher, downplayed the monstrous designs originally conceived for the film to be something more simple that would actually become a staple of vampire films in the future.
Oh, yeah.
So they really dressed it down. Yeah. But of course, Lost Boys did eventually make it to theaters. So
yeah,
Alex.
Yeah, did you see those photos I sent you from the Lost Boys?
I didn't see the link yet. I was going to check it.
Way to go, man.
I'll check it.
It was behind the scenes photos from the last part, and I was just like, this is relevant. I will show it to you later.
It's on my phone, but I was going to put it on Instagram anyways.
Whatever. So, when critics finally got a chance to see The Lost Boys, their experience can be best summed up as mixed.
Yeah.
So a lot felt that there was more style than substance, particularly our boy, Roger Ebert, who stated, quote, "While everything is all over, there's nothing to leave the theater with. No real horrors, no real dread, no real imagination, just technique at the service of formula," unquote.
Sometimes he gets it wrong.
Yikes. Sometimes. Publications like the Los Angeles Times, the Chicago Tribune, and even Variety were pretty down on Schumacher's film, with one of them simply calling it good enough. Jesus Christ.
I know.
On the flip side, publications like The Guardian, The New York Times, and The Washington Post were very positive, praising the film's style, humor, and blending of genres. Rita Kempley of The Washington Post stated, quote, "In the end, all is not lost with these boys," unquote.
That's clever.
Oh, yeah.
Real witty.
The Washington Post writer, huh?
Real witty. Unlike critics, however, audiences fucking loved The Lost Boys and propelled it to major box office success, nearly quadrupling its budget with a box office gross of $32.5 million, making it one of the most successful vampire films of the 80s. The soundtrack was a major hit as well, with the song Cry Little Sister by Gerard McMahon being the breakout hit of the film. And it is so good.
And then Marilyn Manson ruined it.
Did he?
Yeah, he did.
That sucks. My mom.
That's right, I said it.
I'm wearing a shirt, goddammit.
My mom also made the very creepy statement. She's just like, "I just love it when there's choruses of little children in songs." And I'm like,
sure.
I'm like, "Mom, that's really creepy. You realize that, right?" She's like, "Add some string instruments into it. It's just perfect." And I'm like, "Mom, that's really creepy." Anyway, The Lost Boys and 1987's other top-grossing film, Three Men and a Baby, showed that challenging the status quo of the nuclear family could appeal to audiences across America.
Mm-hmm.
Woo. Right away, Schumacher wanted to create a sequel called The Lost Girls, which would feature, in the director's words, gorgeous teenage biker chicks who are vampires.
Joel Schumacher, man, he is he's an out there dude.
As well as the return of Kiefer Sutherland's character as David, seeing as he didn't explode in the film. Ah, the 80s. If there's no body, they're not dead.
Mm-hmm. No, that was literally his justification. It was just like, well, he didn't explode.
That's like, it literally, my dad still makes that justification for anyone in any film ever. Like,
he was
just
stabbed in the heart, that's it.
Yeah, it's just like, if there's no body, they're not dead.
Yeah.
In 2008, a comic book series titled The Lost Boys, Reign of the Frogs was released as a sequel to the original film.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
I don't know about that.
Sounds great.
The film also received some direct-to-DVD sequels in the form of The Lost Boys, The Tribe and The Lost Boys, The Thirst.
That title did not age well at all.
No. The only actors to return were Corey Feldman and Jameson Newlander, as the films were based on the Frog Brothers. The sequels were viewed poorly, with The Thirst doing exceptionally bad.
Mm-hmm.
Even with all of this, the legacy of the film was not tainted at all. In fact, I didn't even know these sequels existed.
Well, it's like The Crow. The Crow had like 4 or 5 sequels, and I'm just like, why?
Mm-hmm.
No, yeah, I had no idea.
Mm-hmm.
I knew they existed, I just never watched them. I was like, is not going to ruin this film
for me. No, this is a one and done.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Let's talk about...
So, as I said earlier, The Lost Boys made vampires cool again. Totally did. It gave the film a youthful take on an old genre that was more costume horror than anything contemporary.
That's true.
The makeup effects and costuming alone would go on to influence almost every subsequent piece of vampire media, particularly Buffy the Vampire Slayer. See episode 84 for more on that.
Woo!
Yep.
Elements like the sexual ambiguity of the vampires in the film, dealing heavily with the use of blood as a plot element in the midst of America's AIDS crisis, the film came to the attention of many contemporary scholars after its release.
This film is a gay favorite, I gotta say.
Yeah, I just noticed there's a lot of actual scholar literature on The Lost Boys out there.
Yeah, because it's a gay favorite, and then like
I did not know that, but I need to read all this stuff.
Yeah,
I just love the film in general.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of the films my mom showed me as a kid that I should have never watched, but like it desensitized me. And ever since I watched it as a kid, I just it stuck in my head. And I watched it over and over and over and over.
That's just how we were brought up, man.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny because my mom also showed this to me at a very young age, and but because she loved this movie, like literally, it was one of like her top three. It was like this and like Amadeus was like. Very weird taste my mom has, I know. She showed this to me at a very young age, and, like, I had never really thought about it, but it imprinted on me, and I was just like, I love this. And then it was, like, the style, the music, like, all of it. I was just like, it was awesome.
I think the soundtrack had a lot to do with the fact that my mom showed it to me, because she was just a huge 80s music nut, and showed me all the artists anyway. But, yeah, this film just ruled.
It's one of those films I think that like our parents were like really into it as teenagers, so it's like, well, of course, this will be fine.
Well,
it's got a Feldman in it.
I like for them, it's just like a vampire movie, but then for like so many like LGBT scholars, like they're like, this is like clearly about the AIDS crisis. And there's just so many different ways you can interpret this movie because obviously it's by an openly gay director, and then like
discussion coming up, Alex. Sorry.
So, adding to that, let's look at some Letterboxd stuff.
Yeah.
The Lost Boys has a 3.6 star rating out of almost 4,000 reviews on Letterboxd.
That's it?
Kind of low, huh?
I thought it would have more.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah, that's kind of a little bit, actually.
Nah, for
well, maybe it's because a lot of like the more newer kids haven't seen it.
Kids these days.
Yeah, all
damn kids.
The youths.
The youths. All the youths in the world need to watch this film.
Well, also, yeah. I mean,
it's hard to find streaming, too. I mean, that's...
Yeah,
I've purchased this film, I think, like, 3 different times at, like, yard sales.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Dude.
They just keep going missing, and I'm like, I'm going to keep buying it. So Susie gives the film 5 stars, saying... This movie is basically just David getting pissed off because his crush, Michael, doesn't like him back.
All right.
Yeah. I can see that.
That's a good take on it.
Ilina gives the film 5 stars, saying, The Lost Boys of the 80s right by making this film influential, cool, and stylish, as well as producing one of the best film soundtracks I've ever listened to. That's spot on.
Mm-hmm.
Fact.
And finally, Sierra gives the film 3 stars, boo Sierra, saying that this is a lot to process, weird California 80s goth vampire aesthetics, that's cool, strong gay vibes from sexy vampire Kiefer Sutherland.
Awesome.
There's nothing wrong with that. Yeah, 3 stars, stop it. Vampire hunters are about 14 years old and no one asks why. Why not?
Okay, yeah.
Random sex scene halfway through the movie.
It was the 80s.
Yeah.
Come on.
Corey Feldman speaking in a fake deep voice for some reason.
That's awesome.
Rambo. Like,
yeah, they said he was going to be Rambo. What did you expect? A sexy sax man, yes. Really, I could go on.
Okay, these are all reasons why it's like a 5-star movie.
Exactly.
I think Sierra just can't process like half of these. She's like, they put this all in one movie?
It's overload. The two Corys would continue to collaborate, starring together in such films as License to Drive and Dream a Little Dream. They even had a sitcom on VH1 of the same name.
That's true.
Unfortunately, both had faced severe issues with drug addiction throughout a big portion of their careers, some of which can be attributed to the abuse they experienced from their peers in the industry. Corey Haim died at the young age of 38 due to complications from pneumonia. There's much more to this story, but it's too dark to delve into for this particular episode.
Yeah. Pretty messed up.
Yeah, let's not do that.
Mm-hmm.
Feldman became sober and has been so far for over 2 decades thanks to the birth of his son. He started a band called Corey Feldman and the Angels.
Which you saw, by the way.
And was subject to much ridicule for his adult career. I'm sorry.
He's actually witnessed this band.
I don't know if anybody's seen it, but you got to watch it. The Today Show.
Yes.
Performance of Corey Feldman and the Angels. Mm-hmm. YouTube it, people. It is so hilarious. It is so out there, and I'm so glad he did. So we're back to Feldster over here. However, he has spent much of his adult life advocating for animal rights as well as rallying against child abuse in Hollywood.
He wrote like a book or did the documentary. Yeah,
it's supposed to come out or has come out.
It already came out.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I just don't want to watch it because I enjoy it. Having at least a tiny bit of my soul left.
Right. Jason Patrick went on to star in Sleepers with Robert De Niro. Yeah. and Speed 2, Cruise Control, with Sandra Bullock. I never saw the second one. So, good job, Jason Patrick.
What was it, Speed 3, Glacier of Doom?
What?
The guy who joked, like, if this glacier moves more than 2 inches per year, we're all screwed. Tell me something I don't know.
Thankfully, he's still working, even though he worked on Speed 2.
Yeah.
Jamie Gertz would take a break from acting and will be turning down the role of Rachel in the hit show Friends. Wow.
Yeah.
Which ended up going to Jennifer Aniston. She would later do some television roles, but most of her time is spent elsewhere, like being the co-worker of the Milwaukee Brewers with her husband, Anthony.
Wrestler. Co-owner.
Co-owner.
Yeah.
Co-owner. I said co-worker.
Right? Co-worker, yeah.
She works for them. She hands out pretzels. Yeah. You know.
I was in the Lost Boys, everybody. Do you want a dip with this?
No, sure, lady. Sure. Just give me my pretzel.
Hey, lady, I was in the Lost Boys, too. Look at it. Just does a little face thing.
He's like, Michael, get it?
Hey, my son's name is Michael.
Kiefer Sutherland would become an Emmy Award winner thanks to his role as Jack motherfucking Bauer in 24, but would also continue to collaborate with Joel Schumacher in films such as Flatliners, I love that, Time to Kill, and Phone Booth.
Yep.
Yeah, he just went on to continue being pretty badass.
Mm-hmm. Flatliners, that's a film that this podcast should do, just saying.
I actually enjoyed Phone Booth, actually, so I know. Have you ever seen it?
I've never actually seen that one.
Kiefer Sutherland.
Didn't they remake it?
Maybe. Colin Farrell and Kiefer Sutherland.
I'll watch it.
Oh. It wasn't a remake. That was the one that was kind of recently.
No, that was like 20 years ago, man.
Never mind.
Yeah.
Again, I don't even know what day it is, right?
That was a long time ago.
I don't know. Joel Schumacher would enjoy a very successful career in Hollywood and finally get his chance to work with Jim Carrey in the director's most successful film, Batman Forever.
That's fucking right.
Hell yeah. I wish you guys would cover Batman Forever too. I want to be a part of that. And then also Batman and Robin, which we just discussed a little bit earlier.
Oh, yeah. Phone Booth came out in 2002.
Yeah.
Wow. 18 years ago.
Mm-hmm. And it's a psychological thriller, so we could technically make it work.
Yeah, so Batman and Robin, notable because of how scary good Arnold Schwarzenegger performances.
Yeah.
I mean, scary is probably the word. I wouldn't say good.
I would say, was it you that we had had this? I'd had this conversation with where I really just want to play a drinking game where every single time he makes an ice pun, you got to take a drink. So
you'd be drunk like 10 minutes into the film.
We had this idea. Well, before we watched Dark Knight in theaters, we got a portable DVD player because it was 2008.
Yeah,
and we watched Batman and Robin.
In line.
Yeah.
In line.
Everybody around us was just like,
oh. Wow, you guys are nerds.
Oh, we were.
You think that's nerd? How about this line now? Let's kick some ice and discuss this amazing 80s masterpiece.
I hate it. Absolutely.
I had to throw it in there.
One of the worst parts about that film that makes me mad even to this day is when Batman bowls over, like, I don't know, the goons.
It has
the bowling pin sound. I'm like, why is that even in this film? Why? Why, Joel Schumacher? Why would you do that?
Nah, the one that always gets me in that one is when they're doing the auction and Batman outbids him and he's just like, you know that kind of money? He shows him the Batman credit card. Never leave without it.
Never leave the cave without it. Shut the fuck up.
Let's discuss a much better film.
I think that movie and like Attack of the Clones is like one of those movies that like we can just like angrily talk about forever.
We can go in and just be like, what the fuck were they thinking?
We can just talk about it forever.
I mean, the nipples on the suit. I mean,
yeah.
Why?
Just, the butt support.
Yeah. Why? That's not necessary.
But Batman Forever is a goddamn masterpiece.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is a good movie.
It is.
Is it? Oh, God, I haven't watched them in forever.
Oh, it's like,
they're all on HBO Max.
I might have to watch them. But, like, I loved them as a child. Like, when I was younger, like, I was, like, obsessed. Because they're bright and they're colorful and they're not, like, they're scary, but they're not, like, scary. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I remember, because I was a kid, I was, like, a Tim Burton purist. And I went to go watch Batman Forever in theaters.
Mm.
And at first I was like, why is it so colorful? Why is there different Batman? Why is it all weird? But then, like, the movie's so good, I was like, after like the first 30 minutes, I was like, all right, I'm going to do this.
Plus,
I think that was like one of my first, besides Carrie Fisher, Princess Leia, Nicole Kidman in Batman Forever was like one of my first crushes as a kid. And I was like, so, like, I went and saw that because I saw the trailer and I told my mom, you have to take me to see this. And she was cracking up because I was so enamored by Nicole Kidman. I was like, she is so unbelievably beautiful. But I was like, I don't know, how old were we, eight or nine?
I was just like. I was obsessed with Uma Thurman. I was obsessed with Batgirl.
Alicia Silverstone.
Alicia Silverstone.
Oh, she was in Clueless.
Yeah, well,
I couldn't stand her.
Oh, really? No, in the movie, because that was the first movie I'd ever seen her in, because I had never seen Clueless at that point. And so seeing her in that movie, like, I don't know, like, I was just like, oh my God. It was hilarious.
No, Alicia Silverstone had that fucking era of, like, Blast of the Past and, like, all that, oof. 90s Alicia Silverstone. Like, give me Nicole Kidman.
I hated her because of Clueless, and my sisters were obsessed with it, and they watched it every day.
Is that why?
No, that's 100% why, and I couldn't stand her because of Clueless. Oh. And I was like, get her off the screen. Like, I just couldn't do it.
So it wasn't that you didn't like the movie, it was just because you had to watch it 20 billion times a day.
Anyway.
let's talk about The Lost Boys. Yeah.
Let's go back a decade.
You're the one who brought up Batman and Robin. This is your fault.
Yeah, this is your fault.
You wrote it into the episode.
Well, I said let's kick some ice and discuss the film.
Everybody, chill.
I gotta go.
So coming next week, our episode on Batman and Robin.
We have to at some point, like April Fool's or something. Like, it's just...
God.
The last question in this discussion is going to be, what killed the dinosaurs? And James, you have to say it. What is it?
The Ice Age.
I'm going to start bashing my head.
There's too many good one-liners in those films. Way too many.
Ugh. The fact that you just remember them is like...
They are burned into my mind.
I saw that one in theaters, too.
So did I.
Yep.
Hey,
Gorilla Suit Uma Thurman was the most confusing thing for a child going through puberty, I gotta tell you.
The Ooga Booga Bane was confusing to me. Yeah. I was like, Bane's not like this, and he's like, brr.
Yeah, he's all weak and like...
Yeah, and then he gets the freaking poison and gets all big and stupid. I don't know. Whatever. So anyway, The Lost Boys.
What are Joel Schumacher's better films? What did you get? So, your thoughts on the film, obviously, we all love it, but elaborate on that, and then your history with the Lost Boys here. Alex?
Sure, I'll go first.
Because we're going to keep doing ice puns.
Yeah, let's redirect. Okay, so my experience with the movie, like I had mentioned before, I started watching it, or I'd seen it first when I was like a teenager, and I fucking loved it, because it kind of gave me... like accessible exposure to like the punk 80s kind of like stuff that had already appealed to me, but I just wasn't able to really explore a lot because my mom wasn't very like didn't like letting me watch horror movies when I was younger.
It just fed the thirst.
Oh, it did. Yeah, no pun intended. Shut the fuck up.
I'll leave that one alone.
But yeah, it did. And it was just like, I loved the aesthetics. I loved the music. I just thought it was so fun. And like, because it had such a like a wide age range, like the characters were across such different like age ranges, I could watch it at like pretty much any stage of my life and like relate to a different character. And yeah. I thought that was really cool. Because when I was younger, I was just like the Frog Brothers. I was just like, fuck yeah, kill the vampires, you know? And then as I got older, like it would just change who I related to more, which I thought was cool. And then also the first time I watched it, I was just like, is that Alex Winter?
Yeah. Oh, I had that thought too. Yeah.
So that was kind of cool. But yeah, I fucking love this movie. And then watching it as I got older, like even as like an adult, like in college, I was just like, this is so cool. And right. it never diminishes in like rewatchability ever. For me, anyway.
Well, Josh Fox is a good filmmaker. He also did Falling Down, and, like, that's a good fucking... Have you seen that before, right?
Yeah, I love Falling Down.
Dude, but, like, the filmmaking style he developed for that film, and, like, The Lost Boys, like, the dude can just pick a shot. mm-hmm. and like make you resonate with what you're saying on screen.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, for a film nerd, for a young kid, for a fucking angsty teenager. Like,
oh, yeah.
You get it all with the last
one. Oh,
voice.
Watching this movie as an angsty teenager is so fucking fun.
Mm-hmm. Oh, speaking of angsty teenagers, James.
I am so angsty. I am just the angstiest teen ever that's ever lived. Yeah, man. As I said, my mom showed this film to me when I was very young. And same thing, it just resonated with me. I mean, growing up post-80s, mm-hmm. I was into music, so the soundtrack was really cool. When you're watching it as a kid, you identify with Michael because he has that big sense of wanting to belong to something. Mm-hmm. And that's why he goes along with David. And everybody, because he doesn't belong. He's trying to find that belonging, and they're messing with him, they're bullying him, mm-hmm. and then he becomes a vampire, and it's, you know, too much. When they go and, I guess, they're skinheads that they kill?
Yeah.
You know, they're killing skinheads, so fuck them. but they show what they really are as vampires, and you get that, like, you know, the grass isn't always greener kind of thing.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Because mm-hmm. Michael sees what they truly are. They have to feed and kill people.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, I don't want to be that.
Like,
but it's already too late because he wanted to belong to the vampires.
Mm-hmm.
So there's all that. And then I identified with it because the single mom aspect of it. Mm-hmm. And my mom was a single mom at that point and trying to go on dates. And if a guy came along, it was the same thing. I would try to prank him and be like, you know, you're not going to be the new dad. Screw you guys. So, there's just a whole lot about the film that I really identified with as well. And then, of course, again, the Frog Brothers, which mm-hmm. I'm sure everybody identifies with.
Yeah.
But as being a comic book reader and being a total geek, you know, I was like,
yeah. And you were the younger sibling, too. Right?
Exactly. And so, I was the youngest sibling. And so, and then Nanook, the awesome dog that's in the film.
Yeah.
I love Nanook. And yeah, everything about the film is great. It still holds up
mm-hmm.
30 years later, or however. I can't count.
87.
40?
Almost 40.
Almost
man.
40 years. Sheesh. Anyway, I mean, we're old.
No, wait.
What, 33?
Our age.
It's your age. It came out the year you guys were born.
Almost 35. Yeah.
I said, I was just like, no, that's not
why
right.
Why are we not counting? I was like, 30?
33.
30, the 1, the 4, divide the 2. So anyway, we can't count. It's a little, I had a long
yeah,
anyway.
The brain goes with age.
It really does. We can't
that's
even.
My joints.
This is really great, especially considering the day.
You know what I could really use for my joints? Some ice. I'm down.
Dave, chill. All
right.
Happy birthday, Alex.
So anyway, yeah, what do you think about it, friend?
So my history with this movie. The truth is, actually, I've never seen the movie the whole way through.
What?
I know. I've always caught parts of the movie.
You
like,
are fired right now.
No,
fired.
I'm serious. The thing is, like, it's not that I was, like, it always was, like, parts. Like, I never just sat down and was, like, watch The Lost Boys. We always knew about The Lost Boys. We always knew some of the scenes. But it was like a patchwork of what I would understand of it back in the day.
Wow.
So this time was the first time I truly got to sit down and just, I turned the TV off, I slapped it up, and I was just like, all right, whatever. I'm going to finally experience The Lost Boys straight, without no interruptions. Like, God damn, I loved it.
Yeah.
Like, I, like, super loved it, though. Because, again, being removed from the nostalgia aspect of it, it's a good film.
Yeah.
Like, it's straight up just, like, has that, I know we've mentioned this before too, but like in a couple podcast episodes, but this has some Akira elements like a motherfucker with the bikers
yeah.
and the speeding through the forest and all these things. And that's Schumacher doing it.
Yeah.
Like pre-anime. The thing wasn't even made then, and Schumacher's just straight up just like, yeah, I'm doing this. And like the tone differences between the stories of the Frog Brothers
yeah.
and then what Michael was going through and badass Kiefer Sutherland.
Mm-hmm.
Like all these elements, like, it's Schumacher in his prime. Like, this is a director in his prime making, like, a film that still was kind of very culturally relevant. You can definitely see that.
Oh, definitely.
And, of course, the soundtrack's amazing. Like,
yeah.
Every scene fits.
Also, real quick, another reason why I love it is because I know it directly influenced one of my other favorite vampire films, which is John Carpenter's Vampires. So,
fuck, I remember that one, like, way back.
I've never
Dude,
seen
James
it.
James Woods.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. You need to watch it.
That was so dark.
It was.
That one was super, like, graphic.
It was very,
like,
it's very
graphic.
It's,
I love some graphic vampires.
That is a very, like, vampire kill everything in its path type
mm-hmm.
of film. Like, there's a part where
I dig it.
James Woods plays Jack Crow, which is a great name. Him and his vampire hunting team are partying after taking down a den, and the, I guess, Dracula vampire comes, sticks his hand through a guy and just slices up, and then he splits in half. That's mm-hmm. all graphic that one is.
Wow.
But I know that that film was directly inspired by this film, because yeah. this is kind of like the beginning of turning vampires back into, like, just bloodthirsty killers.
Away from costume melodramas.
Exactly.
Yes. Away from costume melodramas, for sure. And actually, that's kind of funny, because when it comes to John Carpenter's vampires, when I was a kid, I grew up on From Dusk Till Dawn.
Yeah.
Like, that was the movie I grew up on.
God, I love From Dusk Till Dawn.
But it was that same, my same grandmother from my dad's side of the family. She would always rent horror movies, and she rented John Carpenter's vampires.
Yeah.
And I remember, like somebody in my family was just like, "You're letting them watch that?" And I was thinking, in my child mind, I'm like, "Yeah, I've seen From Dusk Till Dawn like a million times. This is not like insane.
This is not me.
Yeah, this is exactly like I can deal with this." But I'm like literally like 9 years old.
And then there you go too, From Dusk Till Dawn, totally inspired by The Lost Boys.
Yeah,
that's so cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know a lot about, like, what films were necessarily inspired by The Lost Boys.
Pretty much, like, any vampire film.
Yeah, I would say, like, they became the benchmark for, like, turning the vampire, exactly like Anthony said, from a melodrama into a more just tangible, like, killing horror aspect.
And they can be cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's cool what I was going to say. That's what I was also going to say. I was like, I feel like this movie was probably responsible for that, this like era of making vampires like also like kind of like sexy.
Mm-hmm. Interview with a Vampire.
Yeah.
Definitely.
There you go. You mm-hmm. know.
And then also, unfortunately, the teen aspect of vampires.
I mean, a teen vampire movie for mm-hmm. sure.
But like Twilight and, you know.
But I mean, yeah. Well, Twilight's a little different because Twilight is very
lame.
Yeah, well, sure.
Unwelcome.
I was obsessed with Twilight,
she
so.
Was. Mm-hmm.
It's okay.
That's how you know the generations are different.
I read it in sixth grade, and it was mm-hmm. It was appropriate horror for a middle school girl.
Mm-hmm. I don't like Kristen Stewart. That's the thing. Isn't that her name?
Yes.
Yeah.
Her face just bugs me. Like, she has no, like, face.
Okay. The movie is inconsequential to me. I'm talking strictly about the books, but the author is very religious. So in the book itself is also has a lot of religious undertones to
really?
It.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, she's super, super Mormon.
Huh. Super Mormon.
Super Mormon.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't know that. All right.
Interesting.
And also the whole book was basically written as like this, like the author, it was like basically her own like, it was a self-insert, like, mm-hmm. her own weird fantasy, I guess. But that's why the main character in Twilight is so bland, and that's why Kristen Stewart played her so bland, because she has no personality.
Got
it. The whole point of it was that whoever was reading it, it was like, you could just basically
insert yourself
as,
yeah,
like, the main
sense.
Character.
I've never heard it like that, so that makes sense, but I still don't like her.
That's,
anyway,
that's
she's
fine.
She's like your Kristen Stewart, Alicia Silverstone. That's who we're
Let's go back to Nicole Kidman.
You know, it's funny. I just watched Moulin Rouge the other day. But yeah. So I think it's obviously very, very different, because like watching people. I'm in a bunch of different horror groups on Facebook, and mm-hmm. people who love The Lost Boys absolutely hate Twilight.
Yep.
You can't see me raising my hand, but I'm raising my hand because I'm one of those people.
Well, but also like. I mean, I like both for different reasons, because, like, The Lost Boys is way more, like, my aesthetic, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's way more, like, mm-hmm. if I had access to this at the at the age in which that I had access to Twilight, this would have been way more my jam.
Yeah.
because it appeals to me in ways that Twilight, I took what I could get.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what
sense.
I mean?
Queen of the Damned.
Queen of the Damned, huge, like, when I got to see that when I was in high school, like, even mm-hmm. though it is, like, I mean, yeah, awesome soundtrack, I will defend that soundtrack, fucking amazing, like, it's, like, not great, but, like,
yeah. It's not objectively good,
no, but, like, the aesthetic of it, mm-hmm. like, just grimy, like,
oh, yeah.
like, awesome, love that shit, but, yeah, I because I watched Queen of the Damned at a very, very young age, so it was, like, even though if I were to watch it now, I'd be like, this is kind of dog shit.
I'm just saying that it borrowed the whole rock and roll vampire thing completely from this film.
Oh, totally.
And
that's
what I'm saying, like, this, The Lost Boys became a benchmark for so many more vampire films, not Twilight, but all the rest of them.
No, that's a great example.
But yeah, it gave a good jumping off point for a lot of creators who wanted to integrate this kind of stuff into their stories and make a vampire movie.
Yeah, that sexy rock and roll vampire type of...
Yeah, because then it's like, you had all these, like... Well, even Underworld is totally that same aesthetic, too. It's that very, like, gothic, darker, you know, type vampire.
Yeah.
Lost Boys, there you go. So, you know.
Nice.
Way to go, Joel Schumacher.
Joel Schumacher, that's right.
Way to go, man. On this one, not all your stuff. Just this one.
This is pretty hit and miss, but, like...
Batman and Robin.
Batman and Robin. Why do you think that the film resonated with the youth of the time? And what about it gives it such staying power per generation? I think we touched on this a little bit already.
It's that angsty theme, period. Mm-hmm. I mean,
there's
that translates
in the film you can always pull from.
Exactly.
Like what I said,
Being an angsty teenager is something that everybody goes through, so everybody can still identify with the Frog Brothers, they can still identify with Michael, they can still identify with David, all the way through. Each generation can still do that no matter what.
I also think it has a lot to do with, like, that quote that you pulled from the very beginning, where Schumacher wanted to create a movie that identified the other.
Yes.
And
that's true.
Everyone at some point, like, I know it's very, it's kind of cheesy, but everyone at some point has felt like the other.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and so I think that is a very powerful notion, especially if you're watching this movie in particular, because it very, very obviously paints who the other is and gives you the opportunity to identify with them and watch them, you know, succeed.
And it's also kind of cool because on that note, like, the vampires don't act like... They act like they don't give a shit.
Yeah.
Like,
they're like these badasses who can, like, you know, like, that opening scene when they're, like, walking on the merry-go-round and they're just, like, they know they're hot shit. Like, that's awesome.
And they've already been told not to do it, but they're like, yeah, fuck you.
Yeah, because they know. Like, because they know something that everyone else doesn't. They know that they're vampires. They know that they have these powers and that they're badass.
They're fucking ever. They have no consequences, really. So, you know. But, like, yeah, I think that, again, everybody has a thing differently to pull from. And then also touch on, like, the whole LGBTQ aspect of this film.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that's something that obviously the film plays up a little bit.
Yeah.
So people can latch on to it.
I actually think also a huge, huge part that I can't talk a whole lot about it because I didn't prepare anything and I didn't think about it. So this is strictly just from, like, what's immediately in the front of my brain. Biker culture, gay biker culture, huge, like, leather culture, biker culture, huge, huge, like, subcultures at the time, especially in the 80s.
Yeah.
So that makes, like, that is very, very prominent, and I can definitely see, where Schumacher was, like, pulling from those cultures in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, and you got the whole... you know, David and Michael romance.
Where it's like basically they just have sexual tension the entire time.
Exactly. Like, David wants Michael so bad, but he's like, I don't know. You know?
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing, too. I was reading some stuff that people were talking about, and they're saying the whole relationship with Star, too, because they don't treat Star as, like, if you first watch the film, you're thinking just like, oh, she's like one of the girls that everybody's like with or whatever. And, like, nobody cares.
Yeah.
She's just kind of there. She's just there.
Yeah.
And, like, they're more into their own kind of stuff, so they don't treat her as an object, really.
No, she's just,
she's just, like, a hangaround, basically. Mm-hmm.
I mean, she's the catalyst for parts of the movie, but that's about it.
Yeah, exactly.
One thing that I keep forgetting to bring up, or that keeps popping in my head, is, like, how it has a total, like, Home Alone inspired aspect of it, too.
Really?
In what sense?
Well, when they go and do the battle, they set up all the traps in the house.
So, I mean,
like, this could have very well inspired Home Alone as well.
That's true.
Okay,
because they had the little kid setting up traps in the house. Mm-hmm. That's what he did in Home Alone.
Yeah. Okay, I can see that.
The garlic in the bathtub.
That was funny.
That was a fucking... Oh, I love when the 80 special effects...
Oh, like, yeah, so you're, like, melting.
Special effects. Yeah.
Death by stereo, come on.
But I think, obviously, any vampire movie in the late 80s is going to have some implications, especially, I mean, obviously, if it's directed by an openly gay director.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like the exchanging of blood and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, it's very, I mean, for me, thinking about it now, like, I'm like, okay, that's very obviously homoerotic.
Yeah. Well, that, and like, he still had to make it subtle enough to where people aren't going to be like, hey, you're making a statement.
Yeah, like, that's a fucking statement, guy. That's gay.
Yeah. It's just like, you want us to call Mary Harron back? We'll fucking do it, dude. Yeah.
I think Mary Harron would have done, it would have been
she
worse.
She would have had a way different sexy in the middle of that film. Tell you what.
But, yeah, like, when David hands him, like, the bottle of his blood, and it's just like, it's blood, Michael. And it's just like, what the fuck? Like, I'm like, okay.
He's like, yeah, sure.
Sure.
He's like, yeah, whatever, lady.
Whatever.
He's like, it's blood, guys.
Those were worms. Those were maggots. This is blood.
That's exactly what happened.
Oh, my stomach doesn't feel good.
He's like, oh, no, I think he was right. Well, now I feel all different. But, yeah, there's also, in vampire lore, there's also, like, that inherent, like, intimacy between the person who's turning you into a vampire and the person who is being turned into a vampire.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's always been like an explored erotic thing. I mean, an Interview with a Vampire.
Or see our episode on The Hunger with David Bowie.
Yes, that also. Yeah.
I would say too that it also could have been that Joel was trying to like bridge the gap of like the hippie culture with the rock and roll culture.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're trying to coexist together. Because, like, you have the old hippie grandfather, but he's cool.
Yeah.
And, like, the kids are trying to, like, be around him, but he's still old and hippie. He has taxidermy. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, and he's just fucking creepy with, like, his room of taxidermy. But then also he saves the day because he drives in at the end.
Exactly. He's like a good grandpa. Like, he has a really good family foundation in this film.
And isn't that sad that, like, the rebellious aspect about the movie is that, like, there's, like, the family just doesn't want to fucking kill each other?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, what do you mean there's no father figure and they all get along?
And
like, yeah, because the father was a piece of shit.
Yeah. And, but yeah, you see that a lot. Well, not a lot, but I think it's very fun to see that explored where the rebellious family unit, not even in this movie, but just in other movies in general, where, like, that family unit that is explored is just, like, just a family unit that doesn't hate each other. Like, the Addams Family.
Mm-hmm.
Like, where it's, like, a non-nuclear family, and it's, like, considered as, like, super out there, but they all love each other. But, yeah, like, they just don't hate each other, and, like, that's considered weird.
Yeah.
Which is, like, I'm like, it's kind of fucked up.
Right, right, yeah.
But, yeah, so I think that's all kind of tied together in what, like, you can really do a really intense deep dive on this movie.
Oh, definitely. There's a lot of, nuanced things to look at and figure out, you know, what's being said in this scene or this part.
Yeah.
The fact that the Frog Brothers have two hippie parents that are burnouts and just sitting there, like, comatose.
You see them in the background. My mom pointed that out. She was like, is that their parents? Yeah. And I was like, yeah.
And, like, the fact that they're just there, and then the Frog Brothers are the ones that are running that entire comic book store, you know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
there's so much to unpack in this film.
I didn't realize there were so many, like, academic writings on this movie.
Yeah.
I mean, that kind of makes sense, but
I mean, it's like we were talking about Buffy. Like, for a lot of people, when they're coming up in academia, it's probably a pretty important film for them. So, and they're like, hey, there's more to this than
meets the eye.
Yeah, than, like, you know, music and like, they're like, there's an undertone.
I also just love the
many undertones.
Mm-hmm. I also just love the academic inquisition on vampires.
And I do like that, like, the whole, you know, the gay aspect of it, and, of course, the attacking of the nuclear family, and,
mm-hmm.
like, still showing, like, that to me, I like that it pisses off the moral majority. Like, I really
I'm
do.
Sure.
I'm just like, yeah, dude, sorry, like, it's not, yeah. The cast of The Lost Boys has been highly regarded over the years, actually. Who are some of the standouts, and why do you think the cast works so well together on screen?
Ooh.
Grandfather. I love him. He just cracks me up. He just, like, he's like,
he reminds me of my grandfather. He's just like,
yeah, he's like that cool grandpa,
yeah.
That's just like the one of the best parts of the film for me is when they take his classic car. And he comes back, he's like, do you know the rule about buying the car? He's like, no. He's like, fill it up with gas. Now you know. And, like, you would have thought that he would have been so mad because in the beginning of the film, him and Corey Hamer in the
car. To town.
Yeah, he's like, we're going to go to town. He's like, this is about as close as I like to get to town. And just shuts it off. So you would have thought the grandfather would have, like, chastised him a lot, but he didn't. And that's why I was like, cool grandpa, you know? Yeah.
Like, with his like long braid and his headband, he's such a fucking hippie.
Exactly.
Well, see, my grandpa's like a Texan who's like has all this stuff and like owns property, but he's the same way. He's just like, you know, whatever you think. Joke. Sorry, we're all good, man.
Yeah. You heard my grandma earlier.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Also a Texan, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, yeah. The accent was probably a giveaway.
But no, I think to me, I also really liked I like the Frog Brothers a lot. Like,
yeah.
There's something so 80s about... They are definitely a Goonies runoff from the original conception of the script, but they work within the tone of the film.
Agreed.
Really, really, really well.
I think the funniest aspect of them is, like, they portray themselves as these badasses, and then when they finally kill one of the vampires, they freak out.
They're like, whoa!
They don't know what they're doing, and it's, like, the funniest thing to me.
They finally get a chance.
Yeah, they're like, we're going to do it, and they do it, and they're like, motherfucker, run!
I love that, too. I think that's really... I think it's, like, a very accurate, like, the little tough kids who, like, the second they're confronted with, like, something, like, that they can actually do, and they're just like, oh, God.
Oh,
okay.
So this is real life.
Oh, shit. For me, I love the vampires, like Kiefer Sutherland, Alex Winter, like all of them. I'm just like, they're really cool.
Alex Winter is the one that gets stabbed.
Yes.
That sucks. Yeah.
Yeah, he's like,
didn't even make it through the whole film.
No, he's one of the first ones who gets murked, and I'm just like,
yep. In the cave, just gets stabbed right through the heart.
He's like the most visually to me, like a vampire. Like, you can kind of tell he's like, okay, this guy looks pretty vampire esque. Like, he's the little guy in the crew. Like,
I don't know.
Something about him.
Is it because he's just the little guy?
I think so. Like, his paleness and his just, like, don't-give-a-fuck face.
The only character that I don't like is the little boy, and it just doesn't make sense for him to be there, really.
Oh, yeah.
Star's kid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, the little, yeah. Yeah, he's just there for their sake. I don't know why.
Yeah.
Well, I read that the story-wise, they put him there because they just wanted to give Star, like, a pet or, like, a companion. Like, in terms of the lore.
But that doesn't even make sense either, because it's like...
Because... I mean, Star is, like, David's pet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And then she has, like, her own pet? I don't know.
That was the justification I read online.
I mean, it's weird. I mean, it's a weird justification, but I guess I understand it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I love every time, like, the vampires are on screen, I'm just like, oh, they're so cool.
They're very cool.
They're badasses.
And their fucking makeup effects are like shit.
Yeah, they are.
They're really, like, vampire Alex Winter's character.
Yeah. Well, also, again, practical effects stand the fucking test of
time.
They
absolutely do.
Well, yeah, and, like, when they turn from, like, being normal to vampires and all their, like, their red eyes. And when Michael turns from that, like, he sees the skinheads getting killed, and then he turns, like, you see him, like, he turns his face and he's that, and he's, like, struggling with being a vampire. Super cool.
Yeah.
It's awesome. I love it.
Kiefer Sutherland, too.
Yeah, Kiefer Sutherland's amazing.
So cool.
He's so fucking cool, and with, like, the dangly earrings, and I'm just, like, so badass.
Now, considering everything we talked about, the whole themes and rebellion, things like that, what would a modern retelling of The Lost Boys look like, and what would they be rebelling against?
Ooh, I mean...
Be a lot less white people.
That's what I was... I was trying to think of a nicer way to... Yeah, I mean, yeah.
I was just literally about to say they're going to kill racists, and I'm fine with it.
Yeah, that skinhead scene is going to be on repeat.
It's going to be a lot more killing of racists. I mean, that's always been a big thing with me with vampire movies, because I love vampire movies, but they have a huge, huge, huge inclusivity issue. Mm-hmm. I would love to see more not-white vampires.
I can see it being, like, one of these situations where it's like the police in the opening scene fucking some minority up.
Yeah,
and
then,
like, dude, you not know who you're fucking up right now.
Yeah, and then,
yeah.
That's
that would
the
be
catalyst
cool.
right there.
That
fucking vampire.
Really cool. Uh-huh.
Breaks the goddamn cuffs. Like, shit like that, though. But that'd be like the rebellion right there.
I guess they could probably take it in a, like, Daybreakers type of way, but a more youthful style of Daybreakers.
I've never seen Daybreakers.
You never seen Daybreakers?
Never seen Daybreakers.
What?
Man. What
have you seen Daybreakers? Wow! That's a good
Sorry.
Film.
Sorry. You're on the outs.
Well, anyway, Daybreakers.
And everyone else who's listening is just like, I get you!
Thank you, people. No, but Daybreakers, society is reversed, and it's, the world is populated by mostly vampires. Their blood supplies are getting low because they're obviously all vampires, so they're killing off the humans.
Yeah.
So they're trying to find a cure or a blood substitute.
Ah.
It's a really, really good film.
That's a good concept.
It's a really good concept, and it's a really good... dude, Ethan Hawke is in it, and Willem Dafoe is in it. It's a great film. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I should watch it. Okay, I'll add it to my list.
I highly recommend it, but yeah, I think they could do it that way in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
More of a vampire, like, humanistic type thing going on where they're just trying to live in a world with humans, but they keep getting messed with, so then they have to rebel and kill people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that would be a good way that they can make a more current Lost Boys.
That'd be an interesting way of taking it, too. Right. But it still has to have the music.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it's going to be like, you know... Like 2 Chainz and like all current music.
Is 2 Chainz current?
I don't know.
I don't know who the people are anymore.
I guess it's how old I am because I think 2 Chainz is current. He probably isn't. I don't know, man.
Alex, please tell. What's current? Musicians? I don't know.
I'm not the person to ask. I was listening to the Lost Boys soundtrack when you got here.
Yeah, that's true.
So anyway, young people, you tell us. Yeah.
Also, according to people, I'm not young anymore, so...
Oh, no. You passed the mark.
I am in my mid-20s, so...
Oh, no. We're almost at our mid-30s, man. Stop it.
Vampire wouldn't even want to bite you.
They're all...
Let her just ride this out.
They're all, look at that one's running, but he pulled his back. He's like, I don't want to chase him anymore. Let's go for that one that took off that way.
That one definitely has joint problems.
I don't want that joint problem blood.
Like, if he's going to live eternal life, that's going to fucking suck. I feel bad for the guy. I don't know if his blood's going to be any good.
Like, he's going to become a vampire, but his back is just fucked for the rest of his life.
Oh, God. Sounds exhausting.
Oh, you know what? It would have to contend with the internet, too. And, like, videos and, like,
I mean,
capturing shit on your phone.
The problem, I think, with a modern retelling of The Lost Boys would be making sure that it's not shoving in as many modern problems as humanly possible.
It has to be organic, because
that's the one thing that I do really like about The Lost Boys, is that it is done very well. Like, it feels organic. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not in your face.
I mean, it is pretty in your face 80s, but it's organic in the way it flows.
It's in your face 80s, but it's not like in your face, like, this is a non-nuclear family. This is very homoerotic. Like, it's
understated.
It can be read multiple different ways. Like, I think if there is a modern retelling done, it would have to be Jordan Peele.
Jordan Peele, something
akin to that, I think would be very interesting.
The Frog Brothers would be very interesting.
Oh, for sure. Yes. Oh my gosh, yes.
They'd be nerd. Like, imagine a contemporary nerd in the role of the Frog Brothers. Fucking conspiracy theories.
Yeah, that's what I... Yeah, like a traditional conspiracy. Like
they don't own a comic book shop. They have their own podcast.
No, they have their own
about
podcast.
About vampires. Yeah. But okay. No one believes them.
So this is how you actually kill these motherfuckers. Oh, the police are vampires?
Yeah. Jeez. Well, that's how Daybreakers is, too. I'm telling you people, Daybreakers.
Okay, Daybreakers.
You gotta watch
it. I'll watch it. I will watch it. I also love Willem Dafoe, so.
I love vampire films. Well, you know, ones that are done very well, and that's why I watched Daybreakers. I saw it in theaters, and it was great.
Okay. Fantastic. Noted.
I swear I remember you telling me to watch it
in high school, too. I did. Yeah. Well, it was a little bit after
high school.
But it's very, very good, the concept. Anyway, back to Lost Boys.
So, what do you think? How do you think the original Richard Donner version would have played out if we would have actually had it?
The Goonies 2.
It would have been the Goonies fight vampires. That's essentially what it would have been, and I don't think it would have worked.
Well, think of the ramifications, too, for, like, how vampire media would have gone afterwards. We wouldn't have had a Lost Boys.
It would have been, yeah.
We wouldn't have had a Lost Boys at all. That whole face transformation, all these things, it would have been gone.
Right.
Gosh, because, like, this also probably heavily influenced Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
It did, yeah, absolutely.
Like, especially with, like, because, like, I mean, even just, like, the vampire design with, like, the high, like, eyebrows and, like that whole art, like, that whole thing, totally influenced Buffy the Vampire Slayer. So that kind of, oh my gosh, I can't even imagine. All vampire lore would be much, much more wholesome.
Yeah, right?
I don't believe in any wholesome vampire movies. Yeah, I don't believe...
Dusk Till Dawn.
I don't believe in wholesome vampires.
Right. I think it would have been
Dusk Till Dawn.
It would have been super campy, and then thus all the rest of the films after that would have been super campy too.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't have been able to take vampires as serious anymore, I think.
Agreed.
No, it would have fucking ruined the genre, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, not digging it.
Nope.
Definitely not.
So let's put yourself in the film though.
Okay.
Are you likely to fall into the vampire camp or the Frog Brothers camp?
Vampire.
I'm gonna be a Frog Brother.
Because you're a dork. Myself,
dude. Yeah,
you're
I'd be in
dork.
The shop and be like,
I'd no. be like, what? That's blood. Give it to me.
I know. Immediately, the second I see a vampire, I'm just like, hello.
Come on. So you guys stay up all night. You eat people. Let's see.
You can fucking fly.
Yeah, you can fly.
You guys wear like leather jackets and cool earrings
and
ride motorcycles.
Rock and roll, so
like,
let's go. Yeah.
Let's just.
I'd be at the arcade.
That's because you're a nerd.
I know, but I'd be just like. Yeah, whatever, dude. Like, fucking man. I'd be reading the story, like, oh, this is pretty fucking cool. Wait, this is real? Holy shit. Okay, so we gotta do this.
So you would have the headband, and
yeah.
You would be like, this just might save your life one day.
Listen, I wasn't believing before, but now. So I know I'd be a Frog Brother. I just know.
You would. No,
yeah.
You absolutely would.
Yeah.
Well, either I'd be a vampire or I'd be an old hippie grandfather.
It would be,
that's
yeah.
it. That's it. That's all I would
there
be.
Is no in-between.
There's no in-between. It's just one or the other.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. That was a very, like, there was
that
no was debate.
I take this back. I would be the sax man. That's what I would be. That's what I'd be. I'd be oiled up. I'd be playing the saxophone. That's all.
In leather pants?
In leather
with
pants.
With, like, a chain?
Exactly.
Like.
That's all I would
like,
do.
Yeah.
And then again, I cannot get over it. The horde of children just headbanging to the saxophone. Like,
yeah.
What the fuck was that?
It's not even a heavy song, but everyone's just like mosh pitting and headbanging, and it's like the most rock and roll moment. But it's not rock and roll, but it is rock and roll. It's super great. Tim Capello, people, watch it.
I still believe. So funny.
Oh my god.
That scene is like I think the most iconic. Probably that, along with the Chinese food scene, I think
yeah.
probably are the two like standout scenes for most people. If you've only seen the movie once, like I don't know why, but like
those two, and then the scene when they end at the train tracks and they're hanging.
Yeah, they're hanging. That's,
yes.
the, thing
that's
the
other.
That's the,
yeah.
one
that's the other scene.
Stuck out.
Yeah, since I was a kid until now, I always think of that scene. When I think of the Lost Boys, I think of them hanging there.
What? Yeah.
And then they let go, and then Michael's like, ah.
Well, when I was looking at like academic or video essays and stuff, like
yeah.
that, it was just like, well, that's Michael's literal leap of faith.
Right.
Like literal leap of faith.
Yes.
Like,
sure.
I'm gonna take me to the like. What side he chooses to go on from that point on.
And then, yeah, he just hears everyone calling for him, and then he's... Michael!
Oh, hey, Mike, what's up? You want to be a vampire? Yeah.
Just let go. I fucking hate
okay.
it! Oh, my
Michael.
Really? Michael?
Michael? Michael.
Come on, Michael.
Come on, Michael. But Ben's still like, Michael?
Really, Michael? This would have been a way different film.
Oh, my gosh.
Jesus.
If them two would have been in the film and it would have been the original script, then I think it would have worked. But it would have
yes.
just been a comedy and it would have been great.
Yes.
That's
then it, the Lost Boys, and then it, I think if that was the case, I think it would have relied a lot heavily more on like the actual Peter Pan lore.
Yeah, that's true. Because
like there is nothing that actually ties it to like the Lost Boys. It's just called the Lost Boys,
mm-hmm.
and then
yeah.
it makes you like and like.
You know what though? Like that actually gives the moniker of the Lost Boys a much cooler name now.
Right.
Like way cooler.
Well, I think the Lost Boys title was like leaning more towards about all those kids were disappearing because they were getting obviously murdered by vampires. So Lost
yeah.
Boys.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
It's a double meaning.
It could
be two things.
Double
entendre. it could be a lot of stuff, right? That's what we're saying.
All right, guys. So, what would you rate this film out of 5 Michaels?
5.
5 Michaels?
5.
How about you? How about you, James?
Stop it!
This is going to be 5 Michaels.
I'll give it 5 Michaels also. This is a 5 Michael movie.
I can't, I'm gonna be haunted by the image of Jim Carrey.
Jim Carrey as David.
As David.
With the blonde hair
with the blonde hair and the leather jacket.
He could pull off the leather jacket though.
He's like, come on, yeah. It's only blood, Michael.
I hate it. This is
really like... maggots, Michael?
It's maggots.
They're just noodles,
Michael. You know what I'm just imagining is like the Riddler only.
Oh my gosh.
Really?
Oh, really? Like, it's like, it basically just like, yeah, the Riddler only with blonde hair and a leather jacket. Like, that's what I'm imagining, and that's not cool.
Why can't I kill you?
Please, you're as blind as a bat.
Oh my god, with a vampire.
It works! The line works!
The lines still work.
I hate that I brought this up. I brought this upon myself, this line of questions.
We could literally go for like another half hour just talking about this.
You gotta hear us play Smash Brothers. You've already seen it.
I've seen it!
But like, we started recently quoting Batman Forever while we're playing.
Oh my gosh.
Why won't you just die?
Oh, Christ.
Anyways. We did it, guys.
We did it. That was The Lost Boys from the glorious year 1987.
And we couldn't even figure out how old the film was, even though we were born in 1987.
Good going. You guys are great. So, thank you for joining us. That was quite a delight. Thank you so much for coming back.
Yeah.
Welcome back, man.
Yeah, it was awesome.
That was so much fun.
I was stoked to do Donnie Darko, which if you guys haven't listened to that, you should, because it's a great film.
One of our most listened to episodes of the
That's video. Right. What's up? And I was excited to do this, because Lost Boys is one of my other favorite films. And I'm wearing a Lost Boys shirt. You guys can't see, but it's really cool.
It is very, very cool.
Dope. Very dope.
Next week... Good people.
Oh, that's right.
Yes. Next week, we are starting our finale month.
That's right. Last month of season two.
Last five episodes. Holy shit. It's another season under our belts. We're very, very excited. We have a wonderful month all planned out.
It's a summer horror right there.
It is some fun. It's just fun. It'll be a good time. There's no particular theme. It's just going to be a fun time. But thank you, everyone, for indulging.
A little hint for it, though. We're bringing back the remake versus OG.
Yes,
son.
We are doing a remake versus OG revisit. Mm-hmm. It'll be fun. I cannot wait. It'll be a good time.
And it'll be found footage.
It'll be found footage and foreign.
Oh, you already know what it is. All right, let's keep going.
Yeah. So it'll be a good time, and I'm looking forward to doing that. Thank you, everyone, for indulging my birthday selections this year. I know they were unconventional, but it's my birthday, and I will pick what I want to.
There you go.
Other than that, thank you so much, everyone, for joining us. James, please plug away if there's anything you would like to plug.
You guys can follow me on Instagram at @the_mighty_monarch. I write for comicbookresources.com, and I post the links to my work on there. And I also write for Metal Temple, but I focus more on my comic book stuff on my Instagram. So follow me there if you want to read all my articles on comic book stuff.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. And then if you want to stay up to date with us on podcast stuff, you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. We are on Twitter and Facebook at Horror People Pod, and then we are on Instagram at Horrible People's Podcast. That is HORRORBLE, People's Podcast. You can find Anthony on Twitter and Instagram at Hyrulean Hustler, and then you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Ghost Coffee Shop. And I think that's it for this week. If you liked what you heard, please give us a 5-star rating on iTunes and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And tell a friend.
Yeah.
And then other than that, I think that's it for this week. Again, thank you so much, James, for joining us. This was so much fun.
It was great.
And then we will catch you next week.
All
right. Michael.
Bye, Michael.
Bye-bye, Michael.
Bye, guys.